to cover the first part. And yet, what but a comedic view can be taken? What but comedic significance gleaned of so restive a period as that in which we have lived since the war? An age which knows not what it wants, yet is intensely preoccupied with getting it, must evoke a smile, if rather a sad one. To render the forms and colours of an epoch is beyond the powers of any novelist, and very far beyond the powers of this novelist. But to try and express a little of its spirit was undoubtedly at the back of his mind in penning this trilogy. Like the Irishman's chicken, our present runs about so fast that it cannot be summed up. It can at most be snapshotted while it hurries looking for its future without notion where, what, or when that future will be. The England of 1886, when the Forsyte saga began, also had no future, for England then expected its present to endure, and rode its bicycle in a sort of dream, disturbed only by two bogles, Mr. Gladstone and the Irish members. The England of 1926, when the modern comedy closes, with one foot in the air and the other in a Morris Oxford, is going round and round like a kitten after its tail, muttering, if one could only see where one wants to stop. Everything being now relative, there is no longer absolute dependence to be placed on God, free trade, marriage, consuls, coal, or caste. Everywhere being now overcrowded, there is no place where anyone can stay for long, except the mere depopulated countryside, admittedly too dull and certainly too unprofitable to dwell in. Everyone, having been in an earthquake which lasted 4 years, has lost the habit of standing still. And yet, the English character has changed very little, if at all. The general strike of 1926, with which the last part of this trilogy begins, supplied proof of that. We are still a people that cannot be rushed, distrustful of extremes, saved by the grace of our defensive humour, well-tempered, resentful of interference, improvident and wasteful, but endowed with a certain genius for recovery. If we believe in nothing much else, we still believe in ourselves. That salient characteristic of the English will bear thinking about. Why, for instance, do we continually run ourselves down? Simply because we have not got the inferiority complex and are indifferent to what other people think of us. No people in the world seems openly less sure of itself. No people is secretly more sure. Incidentally, it might be worth the while of those who own certain public mouths inclined to blow the British trumpet to remember that the blowing of one's own trumpet is the insidious beginning of the inferiority complex. Only those strong enough to keep silent about self are strong enough to be sure of self. The epoch we are passing through is one which favours misjudgment of the English character and of the position of England. There never was a country where real deterioration of human fibre had less chance than in this island, because there is no other country whose climate is so changeable, so tempering to character, so formative of grit, and so, basically, healthy. What follows in this preface should be read in the light of that remark. In the present epoch, no early Victorianism survives. By early Victorianism is meant that of the old Forsytes, already on the wane in 1886. What has survived, and potently, is the Victorianism of Soames and his generation, more self-conscious, but not sufficiently self-conscious to be either self-destructive or self-forgetful. It is against the background of this more or less fixed quantity that we can best see the shape and colour of the present, intensely self-conscious and all-questioning, generation. The old Forsytes, old Jolyon, Swithin and James, Roger, Nicholas and Timothy, lived their lives without ever asking whether life was worth living. They found it interesting, very absorbing from day to day, and even if they had no very intimate belief in a future life, they had very great faith in the progress of their own positions and in laying up treasure for their children. Then came young Jolyon and Soames and their contemporaries, who, although they had imbibed with Darwinism and the Varsities,